Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
We are back on the death lineup to talk about the Warriors, who are winners of three in a row after losing two really ridiculous basketball games before that. Steph Curry had gotten hurt, but Steph Curry is back, and they beat the Memphis Grizzlies in what may have been the most fulfilling win for me this season, due in part because it was kind of a must-win game if you wanted to keep your head above the water in that playoff race as far as being in sixth or higher. But also, it's because it's the Grizzlies. We don't like the Grizzlies. We like their players, but just the team in general, the Warriors and the Grizzlies, they don't really get along. And as you saw at the end of that game when John and Buddy are shooting fake guns at each other or something. What if you're the league, could you possibly do anything to someone shooting fake guns?
No, but why does he keep doing it, man? I feel like they have, like, there's some players that's like, it's like Zion, like, please, like, just stop eating fast food. Or like Luca, like, come on, man, like, let's work on the diet. And then it's Ja, just please stop pointing your fingers in a gun way to other players on the opposing team. And he can't stop. He just, like, cannot stop doing it. And that's what makes it really funny to me. Like, he's just like, it's the one thing you need to do to, like, fix your behavior, and he just can't do it.
He was really awesome last night, though, until the end when they kind of suckered him into a couple of turnovers to make sure that they won the game.
He was pretty pissed. You could tell he wanted that game.
Yeah. He wanted it. And they have had, I mean, they had the coach who, you know, now that I think of it, it's not that I dislike the Grizzlies. I just was not a Taylor Jenkins fan. He was outwardly, like, saying that Jordan Poole was trying to hurt his players and all that stuff. I didn't like that.
Yeah, I feel like he was, like, doing, like, the I'm writing for my guys type of thing. But, yeah, that was, there was a few comments he made that was just, like, okay, well, that's just like false what you're claiming, but I know you're, like, for your guy right now, but
and, you know, we played them in 2022, and it was a tough series on the road to their championship. They had beat us in the play-in before that, so there's some actual stuff there. But the thing about the Grizzlies, and they have been in a little bit of a free fall. They lose their coach. Ja seems to be not quite so happy with the offense this year. And I don't know. It's kind of interesting because I don't sense that there's anything really wrong with their team. Like, you're watching them. That was one of the best offensive games we've seen all year long. And they were right there with the Warriors. So I'm not exactly sure what their problems are, but they can't beat anybody with a winning record right now. And it's something like 12 in a row of games that they've lost to teams with a winning record. So the Warriors are slightly ahead of them in the race for the top six, and they won the tiebreaker. So if they do finish the season tied, the Warriors will get the edge there. We're going to do this a little bit later, but I was looking at the schedules for the rest, for the teams the Warriors are competing with. So the Grizzlies, the Timberwolves, the Clippers, the Warriors have the hardest schedule by far out of those four teams. So we'll look at that as we talk about the playoffs a little bit later. But can we talk about Steph a little bit? 52 points. I was behind in my viewing. I wasn't watching live. I thought there was a decent chance he was going to get to 14 threes yesterday. I didn't know if he was going to get to 15, because 15 is a lot. But when I think he was at, what was he at? I think he was at 8 at halftime and maybe 11 at the end of the third quarter. And I was like, okay, he's gonna get like two out of the way really quickly, and then we're gonna get late in the game and see if he's got two more. Nope, he missed two immediately, which he called bad shots, and then he ended up with 12, I guess. So still a ton, and he was the best player on the court. He was amazing last night. How many of these do you think he has left in him? Because he was even amazing Steve Kerr on the sidelines there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to put a ceiling on it. Like, this is clearly, like, it feels like an I told you so moment as a fan that was like, just get Steph a number two. We've been saying it for 3 years, and, like, he's still good enough. And, you know, it's just like another, like, area of being frustrated that had he had this year and the year before, like, are we champions again? I don't know. But He's just that incredible of a player. I think there's still more in the tank for him. I can't even imagine, like, next year he has none of these. I feel like he's just, there's been signs of slowing down in terms of some of the injuries he's been racking up throughout the years, these weird ones that kind of kick him out for, you know, 4 to 10 games. But yeah, I mean, I there's been no obvious skill slowdown besides the start of this year, when I felt as though there wasn't as much, like, pure effort because there wasn't a chance that they were going to contend. And but also, like, yeah, that's mainly, and but I know there's been you know, he had a couple bad games from starting, like, that the Denver game, or maybe even a little bit before that, but I hope we're back.
Well, okay, so let's get to this, because I was thinking, 6 games left in the regular season, then you have a week. If you get to the top six, I think you have almost a week off until the actual playoffs start. So one of the reasons to really, really try hard to get to six is so that you don't have to worry about the playoff play-in nonsense, and then you actually do get to take that time off while the teams are vying for the seventh and the eighth spot. What is the biggest worry down the stretch, last 6 games of the season for you?
One of them, I think, is I think that their contention status in terms of being a clear finals team relies on Jonathan Kuminga's integration to the lineup. And it hasn't been that pretty so far. Mm-hmm. And he's missed a game. And I'm not saying that they're, you know, they're a playoff team. I think they're a good playoff team. I think they have at least a round in them, maybe two, hopefully two. Of course, hopefully the whole thing, but just from a realistic standpoint. But if Jonathan Kuminga can integrate himself into that Steph unit with him, Steph, Looney, and GP, and whoever else is in there, like, then I think that changes things for this team. So I think one of my worries is that that's not going to happen.
That he just can't fit in?
That he doesn't fit in, at least in the short term, because he's got to do it quick, right? He's only got so many games left. And then we know Kerr's got the short whistle with him when it comes to the playoffs, the short leash. So we can go into this being like, you know, not a great end to the year, gets yanked early in a playoff series, doesn't get trusted again. Then he goes into restricted free agency with such a bad taste that he signs somewhere else. And then it's like, do you match it? Do you let him walk? You could sign and trade, but he has to agree to sign with you. Like, I think it just gets into some not fun conversations if this doesn't work and you only have 6 games left. So that's definitely a worry for me.
Do you sense that, like, okay, I'll ask this in a different way. Why does it seem like he is not adaptable and the team has to adapt to him? That's the sense that I get, is that his adaptability isn't necessarily as easy. And because Draymond will always say, you know, we got to fit around the player and everything. But maybe I'm shortchanging some of the mental fatigue that Kuminga has because of what you're saying about Kerr's short leash on him. So maybe that is some of it. But to me, like, what I was watching is kind of what you were talking about, which is, okay, how does Kuminga tell his team that he understands the deal, and now it's just effort and rebounding and getting downhill? Like I expected to see a little bit more of that. And what it felt like was Kuminga trying to figure out how to play in the offense and hesitating and not being definitive in his decision-making.
like, I wonder what his agent's telling him. I'm not saying that that's the reason, but it's like, this is a contract year, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you want to get paid $35 million? Well, you gotta like ascend to, you know, what you were drafted to be, which is Paul George-esque. It's ISO basketball. It's, you know, one, it's taking your man, being two way. And I think a worry for me is that, I mean, he's still early in his career, and not to say this is like a bad thing, but I think he might just be like an advantage scorer, in the sense of, if his defender is too small, he is going to back him down. If his defender is too big and slow, he can take him off the dribble. But anyone that's like kind of a peer, he's like shut down by,
and
like
he just put someone immediately on him that's passes like, the ball out.
Or he takes bad shots.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that what the advantage score is like a bad thing per se, but I think that maybe he's forcing to be more than that. And I'm sure he believes he's more than that. And I hope, and I believe it to an extent too. I'm just feel like I've been seeing it lately where I'm like, I think that might be the situation here.
I just found it interesting that Kerr felt the need to kind of coach him through the press, where he did the interview and he's like, yeah, you know, I had to tell JK, just be physical and start guarding, you know, picking up. We need you to do that with Gary out. And so it's just, I just feel like, man, shouldn't they be beyond this? And shouldn't they have already sort of have the plan, and he's in and they're in and everything kind of works? And it's like, we're back at square one just because the guy hurt his foot.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't have any answers to the situation. Like, it's either kind of put up or shut up for him.
Okay, now my biggest worry, I think it's just Steph's butt cheek, man.
Yeah.
He fell on it. It looked very painful. It reminded me of the one in Houston that had him out for a little while. And now I guess he's playing with a butt brace or something. And that's, it sounds like he's going to have to play with that for the rest of the regular season. And it's just night and day with the offense with him and without him on the court. I think they've been doing a good job. Jimmy Butler leading the crew in the non-Steph minutes. The game slows down. They're a little bit more predictable, but they're also very patient, and you can tell the tone of the team changes. But any less than 95% of Steph, it really looks like they're not going to have much of a chance, even as good as Jimmy has been. So I don't know the plan as far as, out of these next six games, how much rest do you give Steph? How much rest do you give Jimmy? Because Jimmy went down with the ankle in last night's game, where I think a lot of Warriors fans collectively held their breath until he got back up in those silver shoes, those silver Antas, or what's the Dwayne Wade ones? Linning. I think he's a Linning guy.
Linning.
Yeah. And same with Draymond too. Like, Draymond is guarding Zach Edey and Jaren Jackson all game long. And he's, you know, that has to take a pounding on him. And we know about the back and the calf thing that he's been dealing with in the later years of his career. So that, to me, they're going to have to be really smart about this. So how can you get the necessary amount of wins to stay in the top six, as well as rest your best players so that they are somewhat fresh for the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely like, yeah, I said this in plus minus that it was Edey, right, that stepped on his ankle. So yeah, I mean, that's definitely, I'd say that should be just health for this veteran team that relies on these two players so much, so heavily, is probably like a top worry. It's probably top two. I think the Kuminga one is, for me, is just like, they could be more.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the health and what about GP? And, you know, so the healthiest team usually wins most of the time. You know, if you're like a contender and you're like the healthiest team, you know, if you Jimmy Butler's been on the back end of actually being the not healthy team for both of his finals appearances. And I think, not to say he would have won them had they both of those teams been healthy, but what was this, the conversation against Los Angeles was, oh, no Gorin for most of it. No, they were missing someone else like really important too. And then the last one, it was Tyler Hero was missed the entire thing, and he's like their best player now. So health is, yeah, we need those.
Oh, what do you think about, and this is kind of my other worry, which is they're relying a lot on Moses Moody in the front court. Now, he doesn't necessarily always guard like, he's not guarding like these giant fours or anything. They'll make the matchup switches when they need to. Quentin Post will come in or Looney will come in. But he's kind of been their starting four next to Draymond as the starting five in a lot of these lineups. I kind of worry about him wearing down because he's not like a, like he's got like broad shoulders, but he's like a more of a wiry dude. And in this Warriors defense, there's going to be times when he's matched up against like a LeBron, and LeBron's going to see him, and LeBron's going to just stick his butt out and walk him down and be really physical. And that's another thing. Cause if you remember in 2022, Moody's role was more like, you know, give Luka a shot and he's hitting open shots because no one's really paying attention to him. And now he's just much more of a focal point on the team. And that's one where I'm like, this one's going to be interesting because, you know, Moses Moody's either going to be like the most affordable player in the NBA with the contract he signed, or teams are going to target him and fans are going to be very bothered with Moses Moody in the playoffs. So that's one, but that's mostly for the playoffs. That I'm worried about for the playoffs. But, you know, they play Denver, they play the Lakers, they play the Clippers, they play the T-Wolves. So we'll probably see at least a little bit of strategy involved in some of those games because everyone wants to win those games. No one's going to want to lose. You don't want to lose to, the Lakers tomorrow night, knowing that, you know, there's a chance you play them in the playoffs. You want to show out. You want to play well so you get some confidence, especially against a team that they've struggled against.
Yeah, I mean, I think the plus minus reminded me of it today that we have the tiebreaker against Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice. And we have the tiebreaker against Memphis. The one that's scary is the Clippers. So
yeah.
I think for an ultimate win for this season, you just have to make sure that last game of the season doesn't mean anything because it's against the Clippers. And if it means something, that means you're playing for probably to avoid the play-in.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be such a blow if not only you got up for that game, but you lost that game going into the play-in with that loss would be pretty tough, man. Steve Kerr's 0-3 in the play-in, man.
Yeah, very small sample size, but they're not good in that play-in. Yeah.
That's not that small of a sample size compared to everyone else. That's probably like a pretty higher sample size that you know, they're probably up there with like the Bulls and the Hawks that are always in that thing. Yeah. Do you have the remaining? I actually, that was my thing before. Because I got on an optimistic kick, I'll say, because I was looking at everyone's remaining schedule, mm-hmm. and I know that we have a hard, looks like Lakers, Denver, Houston.
Four of the six teams they have to play are all in the top eight right now in the West.
Yeah, it kind of feels like they have some control your own destiny type of stuff, though, which is I kind of would rather have than say we played, you know, OKC or like some East teams where it's not as much control your destiny. Like top East teams, but I'm looking at like Houston's schedule, right? They're the two seed. They're the two seed, and the Warriors
are five games ahead of the Warriors.
Yeah, they're 4.5. But even Houston has OKC, Golden State, Clippers, Lakers, Denver. They hear this: Utah, OKC, Golden State, Clippers, Lakers, Denver. Five out of those six remaining games are like actually like really tough. Then I go to mm-hmm. Denver, who's below them. The Warriors are 2.5 games behind Denver. They have San Antonio, easy. They have the Warriors, hopefully difficult. They have Indiana, could be difficult. Sacramento, pretty easy. Memphis, we'll see. Houston, hopefully a little difficult. Then you go to the Lakers. The Warriors are only two games back from the Lakers. They have Warriors. They have an easy game against the Pelicans. Double back-to-back away games against the Thunder. And you might think that OKC will like, we're so far ahead. Maybe we'll just like call it in early. But like you said, that could be a matchup in the playoffs. Maybe you want to show them what you got. If the Thunder win out, they get to 70 games. So part of me thinks they might want to win out
mm-hmm.
to get to 70 because not many teams get to 70.
So Warriors chased 73 that one year.
I know. OKC is also younger than that Warriors team was probably. But just the Lakers double OKC. Then they have Dallas. I know Luka's going to be mad at that game. I know AD is going to be mad at that game. He's finally back. Not to say that that's an obvious Lakers. I mean, that probably is an obvious Lakers win, but maybe there's a little something there. Then they have Houston, and then they're at Portland. So Houston's a tough one, but it seems like they kind of have Houston's number, and then at Portland. And then the Warriors, we have Lakers, Denver, sorry, at Lakers, home against Denver, home against Houston, at Phoenix, who I don't know if you've seen the reports for that Phoenix team. KD's out for the next three, and then they'll have four remaining, and he has to play at least three of those to be get the All-NBA stuff. So we'll see what happens there, but I think they're kind of, you know, done for. Then you have Memphis, who's a half game back from the Warriors now. They have Miami, Detroit, at Miami, at Detroit, at Charlotte, home against Minnesota, at Denver versus, and then home against Dallas. Minnesota, half a game back from Golden State. They have the easiest schedule remaining, at Brooklyn, at Philadelphia, at Milwaukee, at Memphis, home against Brooklyn, home against Utah, and then the Clippers, one game back from the Warriors. Against versus home against the Pels, home against Dallas, home against Dallas again, home against the Spurs, home against Houston, at Sacramento, at Golden State. I guess my whole point of looking at this was just getting a little optimistic. Can they catch two games back, and they maybe control, if they can control their own destiny, and the Lakers have those double OKC games?
Well, they would have to They'd have to
probably win out.
Well, let me look at what you were looking at. So, the Warriors probably would have to win. So if they beat the Lakers, then they're only one game back.
Mm-hmm.
So if that has to happen in order for them to have a chance. Then you have one game back with five to go, and you probably have to win four out of those five, and that.
The thing is, Lakers probably have the tiebreaker. No, I think
actually,
the Lakers
you'd have six left, so you'd have to win five out of the last six, probably.
Lakers are 3-0 against them this year.
Yeah.
So they would have the tiebreaker. But I'm just saying, like, yeah, the Warriors have a tough schedule, but they kind of control their own destiny. And the Lakers schedule ain't that easy with double OKC.
How did they get double OKC in OKC? That's
I don't know.
Unfair.
It's a weird schedule making. Yeah.
So somebody told me that. They think the reason why the schedule is the way it is because it was a concession by the Players Association to get a longer All-Star break. You know how they now they have like a longer All-Star break where you play the All-Star game and then you have like a week off. And so he was saying that he thinks it might be related to that, though. I don't know. The Warriors schedule is much harder than everybody else's. I would be fine playing the Pelicans and the Nets and the Spurs more so than the teams the Warriors are playing and the Lakers too, playing OKC. But who knows?
Me too. I mean, but you know, we looked at the schedule right when they got Jimmy Butler and we were like, oh my God, this looks easy as hell.
Yeah,
up until this moment.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll see.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
All right. So if I were to guess, or actually if you were to guess, we'll both do a guess here. Where do they finish by the time the season is over, which is like April 13th?
I'm going to go with five. I don't love finishing fifth because I don't love the first round matchup against what could be Denver or the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
and then the second round matchup against OKC, like that all sounds terrible to me. Like I would much rather be on the other side of the bracket where you get maybe Houston in the second round. But I mean, that's all wishful thinking that we even get the fifth seed, avoid the play-in, win the first, you know, that's all just thinking down the line. But I think they do end up with five, which, oh my God, you tell me that, like, you know, pre-Jimmy, like some of those games before Jimmy, like I would have been like five. Are you kidding? So I'm going to go with five. I really want to be optimistic and say four, by the way, but I don't even love four anyway.
Yeah, four, you have the same problem.
Yeah.
I'm going to say six, and I think they're going to have an opportunity to move up, but maybe towards the end of the season, they're just going to concede. If they can clinch six, I think they'll just be happy about that. The problem is, now here's the real problem. Seven is kind of the place that they want to be if you're just looking at the matchup.
You
because
want to play Houston
they're so good against Houston.
Yep.
That veteran savviness. I think if it was a 2-7 Warriors and Rockets, my guess is the majority of the national media would pick the Warriors to win that series, which
I
is
agree.
Insane, right?
2-7 upsets haven't been that irregular in the past couple of years. The Lakers did it against Memphis two seasons ago. I forgot who did it last year, but I thought someone did. I think the Pacers did it to Milwaukee. Was that a 2-7? I forget. But
well, Giannis was hurt that whole series.
So he was, yeah. Why.
So I'm going to say six, and I think you just concede because if you have to chase five to do what you said, you're chasing five just for a just as hard matchup, which would probably be the Lakers. Either or Denver or the Lakers are really hard matchups. Pick your poison. If they fall into seven, I think they would be spooked out about the play-in in general. So I think they're going to shoot for six, concede it, maybe rest some guys at the end, and hope that the other dominoes fall for them so that they don't have to worry about seven. That'd be my guess, but. All right, let's talk about the NCAA Women's Tournament and some of the draft related to the draft around some of the players who we thought might be coming out but may not be coming out now.
Valix Valley.
Home run.
Olivia Miles says not only is she going back to college, she's going in the transfer portal. Is this a Hannah Hidalgo problem? Like, what is the scenario here?
I mean, I don't know the details. It kind of does sound like maybe she wants more of that, like, on-ball role. Where she was on ball, but so was Hannah. It was, like, split time. And maybe she wants that just pure on-ball role. And I've seen TCU floated out there because, you know, as we both listened to the Athletic women's basketball show, and they've always said like TCU is like where you like, you know, all these like 24, 25 year olds who like really should be in the WNBA are just because they've taken that fifth year. So they have a much older roster. They run a WNBA style of offense. It could make sense for her to play there. But other than that, I don't have many other guesses as to where she'll, this is my first year, like kind of covering the transfer portal and like seeing who goes, like, I'm just sad that my U of A Wildcats just got poached, man. They just got absolutely decimated by the
I don't
portal.
Even really understand the transfer portal myself.
It sounds like it's just free agency. You just get to go in and say, I'm going to go somewhere else. And I guess you don't have to go somewhere else. You could still return, but I think you only get to do it once unless you take the fifth year, then you get to do it again.
And so the other part of this is related to the WNBA and related to the collective bargaining that we've been talking about with Michelle Smith and with Sabrina Merchant when we had them on. And so it sounds like it could also be related to that because you can wait until they redo the CBA and more than likely your rookie deal is going to be worth far more than it would be if you came out in the draft this year. And also, she probably thinks that she can get her NIL game up. I don't know what her NIL deals are like today, but
I feel like I can guess. Like, it's probably better than most considering she's a top player, but when you talk about the Pages and even the AZs, even the Kikis, I imagine they all make much more than Olivia because I just feel like I don't see her. And I know there's reasons for that. Like, I know that in terms of just like
you're talking about the glasses. you think the glasses take away
the WNBA has always said it, like they struggle with like the or they maybe have chosen, I forget like the exact, and I don't want to butcher this, but just like the more of like the women who like to dress in the more masculine way mm-hmm. have had a harder time of like getting those marketing opportunities and say,
because I mean, yeah, it's society in general.
Yeah. So, and if, as wrong as that is, like, I think that has hampered her bag a little bit. So for me, for her, like, it would make sense to go back and, you know, the rookie scale contract, we talked to Sabrina about this. We talked to Michelle Smith about this. It's about 70 something thousand on a rookie scale. You get 3 years, fourth year's a team option. Sabrina came in and told us she guesses it's going to be 4X'd mm-hmm. by the time of 2026. So that 4X of 70 is 280.
Mm-hmm.
So you, by the end of her rookie contract, she's very close to being a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's not even including her in other endorsements, the NIL stuff. So I, maybe that is, you know, it's a clearer path to being a quicker millionaire in a league that's so hard to maintain a spot.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very, there's only what, 12 times 13.
That's well, how many they are adding some teams, and they'll, I imagine they're going to try and get to 16 within the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. Cause 16 is a better number than
I think they are 12. At 16.
Wait, are they at 16?
So they're at 13. They're 13 with the Valkyries,
with
right?
The Valks.
They added the Tempo.
Toronto.
And they added Portland. Did they name that team yet?
So 15. So they're at 15.
But I think Cleveland got a bid.
Oh.
I thought someone else recently got a bid.
Got it.
Maybe I would have heard about that more. I don't know.
16. 16 is the perfect number. And then you kind of figure out where you are there. But you're right. The NBA has 30 teams.
Mm-hmm.
And the WNBA only has 16, so you're really truncating the rosters, the ability for people to come out of college and make money and or be on a roster. So yeah, so there's also conversation about Flaje Johnson about whether or not she's gonna leave or she's gonna come back.
It sounds like by the time someone's listening to this, they'll have an answer, I'm assuming.
I saw Sabrina. I think it was it Sabrina or Chantel who wrote the article about Flaje in The Athletic?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay. So just glancing at that, it sounds like Flaje's decision is wanting to win the title and being like the key player.
Oh, okay.
I guess she won as a freshman.
She did.
Her coach, Kim Mulkey, was saying like, you know, that was my first year and, you know, she really deserves a lot of accolades for kind of being, you know, the player who came in when I came in. So, I mean, it's just interesting because you think about it just on like if nobody knows anything about how college sports works today or how pro sports works, they would go, well, why, you know, you have freshmen in the NBA wanting to come out to play to freshmen in the NCAA wanting to come out to play in the NBA. Why isn't that the same thing in the WNBA? And I just don't think that they realize how low of a salary it is. And right now, who's to say that you have less marketing opportunity in an NIL situation than in a WNBA situation? I'm sure that Paige's NIL deals at UConn, they're probably going to be just as good or more if she gets drafted by Dallas, right? Like, because think of how much business there is around UConn basketball versus how much business there is around Dallas basketball these days.
Yeah. So
that is probably part of her worry. Not that big of a worry, but that was probably part of her trying to make that decision.
But it is players like her who are going to help the league grow where the Dallases do get, you know, more accolades and more attention. And the thing is like her NIL is going to carry over. It's just, you know, the opportunity for more is not the same as in college, because I mean, you look at some of those numbers that those games are getting, even like UConn versus USC this year, of course, Iowa versus South Carolina last year, like, that's more than it's more than the WNBA finals, right? Like I haven't looked this up, but assume. Yeah. So I think the NIL bag that she has now carries over. It's just the opportunity of increasing that, but she's going to be someone who helps, you know, the league going forward. So the quicker she comes out, the better for everyone.
Obviously Juju's injury kind of threw a whole emotional weight around the tournament. It was almost like, man, I wish we didn't have this tournament that she could be healthy again. Like, I think that's how a lot of people felt. It's like, just such a bummer for her to get hurt. And now they're probably going to be very careful with her. You don't want to rush her back, and which means she's probably missing the entire next season. So that's,
I'm scared to go there, but it makes sense. But I really hope that's not the case, man. I really hope she gets at least like one game back before the tournament starts, and then she's there for tournament play.
That's like, tough, though. That's tough to go right into like playing the most competitive basketball of the season.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where are you now? I'm sure you've done the draft in your head with Olivia Miles out of the draft. Kiki Iriafin did not play very well the last two games in the tournament. In fact, the UConn game, she was, what was she, like 2 of 15 shooting or something crazy like that? She had a really bad shooting night. What are you thinking about for Valkyries at this point?
I just want to start by saying that's kind of why I brought up the Kuminga advantage player thing, because that's what made me think about it when I was like, what's going on with Kiki? And then it kind of put it together. I was like, I think she's like Kuminga. She's an advantage player. If there is someone who is, you know, too slow to stay in front of her, she's going to go by them. If there is someone who is too small to stay in front of her, she'll body them. But if there's someone like Sarah Strong, who is like around her height, around her physicality, stumped, absolutely rendered useless. And I hope that maybe she can, you know, add some more stuff to her bag eventually. And I'm not overreacting here, I hope I'm overreacting, but that was kind of my take, was like, I think she's just like Kuminga with the advantage player stuff. So yeah, I mean, I've been saying it on this podcast that I've been like worried that, but now with Olivia Miles and AZ Fudd not declaring for this draft, she could even go before them. And I think this draft went from like something that I was kind of like, oh wow, they could get a good player here, to like a point where they are going to be taking a risk on a player with a high ceiling, low floor, or they just go, we're just going to go high floor, low ceiling. Like, there's not as much sure bets. And I know that usually in the WNBA draft, and again, this is probably like the second time covering the WNBA draft. I covered it loosely last year. I knew about like the top six, but this time around, I know most of the players. So like, if I think about it in an NBA context, like we said, there is 30 teams in the NBA. There is currently 13. So not even half, but if you just, we're the pick number 5, you know, you multiply that by 2, it's 10. Like, that's kind of in the sphere of where we would be if it was the NBA. Like, I guess you're not expecting like this home run pick at number 10 in the NBA, but it did look promising there for a second. It did look very promising. I think Dominique Malanga goes 2. I think I've said it on this podcast, she's always been the number 2 pick over Olivia anyways, but I thought with Olivia there was like a obvious need for a point guard with Seattle, so they were going to go point guard, but I think they just go Malanga now. And then now you're just looking at Sonia Citron from Notre Dame, who in my opinion doesn't have like the highest ceiling, but she's going to be like a solid 3-and-D role player who'll have a long career in this league. And like, I would be very happy if she was a Valkyrie, but I think she can go 3. I think, you know, Kiki might even go 4. And then now at 5, it's like, you know, we're looking at Anissa Morrow, who is a 6'1 forward who sure is a good shot maker, but I'm not too high on from a star perspective, you know, just being an undersized 4. Like, she's Nafisa's height. And that makes me think, oh, could she be Nafisa? But Nafisa stretches the floor. Nafisa plays defense. She can guard anyone. It's like, this is just a different player here. Like, I don't think Anissa will ever come near that. And then you're looking at Maryland's Cheyenne Sellers. You're looking at NC State's Saniya Rivers. Two players I like, but there's just obvious limitations with them. I just didn't think that, you know, we would consider drafting them. So I've got to do a little bit more research just to have. As you could tell in my voice, there's like a lot of uncertainty and unsureness of like who, one, we're going to get, and two, if I'm going to be that happy about who we get. I think it's a clear loss of a draft if they draft someone like Georgia Amor, who, don't get me wrong, is a good player, but she has obvious limitations. 5'5", 5'6", good scorer, but will never, you know, be an all-star in this league is my take. I don't think so. It's just basically going for if they go for the high floor, low ceiling player, I think that's an obvious loss because they're going to be bad this season. So why not develop someone?
Yeah, absolutely. So it just makes, you know, this is something that when we were, you know, one of the things about starting covering this team is you're just, you haven't, like, we haven't lived it. Like, I've followed some of the drafts and stuff, but not very closely. So you're like, oh, this position or this person getting hurt or all of these things like change your draft board and they change the possibilities of this team. And because the Valkyries, like, they have some players that they got in the expansion draft and that's it. And they have to, you know, they've signed some free agents. So the roster is really like you're creating the roster from scratch. So this, them hitting on this pick is 100%. It's almost like so important for them to hit if you want to set the franchise off in the right thing. Cause missing on this pick feels like you're back to be, it, you know, yeah, you're going to be the worst team in the league or something. So,
yeah, I mean, the only, I think I say the argument if they miss the pick is that we all know what this upcoming free agency is going to look like where everyone's available and they could just go the route of like, boom, three stars that we just signed because of the new cap and everyone's going to be a free agent because of it. So we just completely set our team up from having, you know, zero stars and a missed pick to three stars right from the free agents. And we'll see. But one thing I do want to say though, before we move on, and by the time people hear this, Flage will probably have been made her decision. I think she needs to make the decision by April 4th, but I was like kind of thinking it in my head of like with Flage, like I've got to assume that, you know, she has like the brand portfolio that's more resembles a Paige Beckers than an Olivia Miles. Cause I feel like I see her everywhere, man.
And she's like on the commercial that Zena Kata reads before the,
I hear it every
podcast,
yeah,
is about Flage and her
And her finances.
Yeah, exactly.
And she's a rapper too. She has a song with Lil Wayne. I
saw that.
So my thing is like, so for her with like the brand stuff, like, so staying the extra year, you know, the 200K versus the 70K, like to me, I mean, that's so much money to me, but to her, like might not be as much of a deal breaker as it is for like an Olivia. Like, I think she might already have the bag. And she already won the championship. Sure. It was her freshman year. I do get that quote where she wants to be the focal point of a championship team. That makes sense. My argument though, is if she declares next year or she doesn't, if she declares this year, she goes as high as two, she can go above Malanga. I wouldn't take her above Malanga, but I could see her going above Malanga.
Mm-hmm.
If she declares for next year, you know, you run the risk of, you know, like a lot of players in that class. And also the current sophomores who are draft eligible could reclass up, not reclass, but declare early. Juju is eligible. I don't think she will. You know, she probably wants to win a championship and USC give her the best opportunity. But there is the option of those, in my opinion, maybe the greatest freshman class that I've ever seen in those sophomores, or the greatest class I've ever seen when they were freshmen. Those sophomores now, some of them could declare early. So you're looking at, you know, Lauren Betts, Taniya Latson, who I know you got to see versus LSU, Olivia Miles, AZ Fudd, maybe some of those current sophomores. You know, there's just a chance she's at like five or six. I don't know how much of a big, if a deal breaker that is for her, probably not that much, but there is an opportunity for her to be the number two pick. And next year, I don't think she'll be the number two pick. I think she'll probably be five or six.
So our draft bracket that we did, not draft, our tournament bracket that we did, we got all the Final Four teams, but a lot of other people did too. we're sitting like 100th out of the 260 some odd,
man,
submissions. But we'll see, you know, if I'm sure if South Carolina wins, like we'll jump up to
the top 20 probably
or something. Yeah. Well, whatever it is. But I kind of want to see UConn win.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried about that pick now.
We did two brackets. I did one in our BSPN or Valks Valley bracket, and I had UConn beating South Carolina. And then when we did the one for the Athletic Women's Basketball Podcast, No Offseason, then together we switched and we had South Carolina. So either of those teams could win, and I'll be okay. But there's also Texas. There's also UCLA. There's a lot of Madison Booker talk out there as like the one that not everyone knows about.
I don't know how not. I was thinking about it. Like, I'm just thinking of like draft classes, and you know, the Juju draft's going to be her, Madison Booker, Hannah Hidalgo, Michaela Williams from LSU. Madison Booker is the clear number two pick in that draft. I think I tweeted it out. It was after a Sarah Strong game, but I was like, if the WNBA allowed for every single player to be draft eligible right now, basically saying like everyone can go to the draft for freshman, sophomore, junior, what would be like, how high would Sarah Strong go? And I started doing the exercise in my head. It's like, okay, obviously Juju's one, Paige is two. I think Madison Booker might be three. And then I think you're looking at like a Lauren Betts at four. And then I think Sarah Strong goes five. Like, I think that's how good Sarah Strong is and will be, because this is obviously not a who's the best right now. You also have to account for potential. That's why I'm not picking Hannah Hidalgo, because although she's probably a top five player right now, she still has those limitations with her height. And I think Sarah could be better down the line. So I think Sarah would go five, but that's to say Madison Booker would go three, in my opinion. I think she's that good. But what I was going to tell you, though, is I think right now UConn looks like they would beat South Carolina if that was the final matchup. UConn's just killing. And South Carolina is barely squeaking by in some of these games. But I'm kind of worried about their UCLA matchup.
Mm-hmm.
I think their center is their most shaky position for UConn. And Jenna or Jane Al-Alfie is who they play. And they also have Ice Brady. I think she's a freshman, and I just don't think she's ready. But you talk about that being their worst position, whereas that's the clear runaway best position for UCLA. Mm-hmm. They have to just really commit to just every single time. When they started losing the LSU, when it started getting tight, I was like, why are we just not giving it to Lauren every single possession? So that's that. I'm more worried about UConn's success in that game than I am their title game. Like, I do think we picked wrong. I was actually the driver behind that pick, and I think I picked wrong that South Carolina was going to win. I do want South Carolina to win. I don't really mind. I don't care that Paige doesn't get a title. I think I want the new era of Dawn Staley's Gamecocks to be what Geno's team was in those years. I want that legacy for South Carolina. So
did you watch? It was the game. I think it was the game before the UCLA game where they interviewed Geno before the fourth quarter started, and they were, is it before the fourth quarter or at halftime? And he was like, he just wants Paige to be more decisive in shooting. And all of a sudden she just goes off. She's like bombing threes. She gets whatever the record is that she broke. And it was so funny because Geno was acting like, he's like, I don't know. She doesn't listen to me. She's not doing X, Y, and Z. And he even told I forget the broadcaster's name. I forget.
Rocco.
No. It wasn't Rebecca Lobo. It was the woman who does the sideline stuff. And
Holly Rowe.
Yeah, Holly Rowe. That's who it was. And he was like, can you talk to her? Like, and then she just goes off and she's just ripping the net with every shot that he takes. I just thought that was really funny.
She has the opportunity this tournament to become the highest leading scorer of all time in March Madness. I think she has to combine in like 50 something points in these last two games. And it seems very realistic for her to do it.
She's such a cool competitor. Like, she just directs everything. Like, you know, I haven't watched every single game, obviously, but it seems like it's pretty hard to get her out of her control, her self-control. Like, she's just so polished in that way.
I think she's always going to be positive in a game. It's just the question is she going to be like absolutely dominant, or is she just going to be like positive? Because she's an efficient shot taker and she makes the right play. That's like Jimmy Butler for the Warriors, you know? He's just like wants to make the right play, but we need you to go off, Jimmy. So yeah,
Jimmy's that, like giving up, passing up layups for like corner
three. Draymond corner
like,
three.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
All right. Last segment here. We forgot to do this last time. What's Bri watching? All right. What's the last thing that you watched that was good?
That was good. Oh, I've seen some some not great ones lately. I'm just looking at my history here.
You know, you still haven't friended me on Letterboxd.
What's your thing? I meant it because I keep seeing it on your Instagram story and I keep going, oh, I need to friend this guy. What's
you
your
know
thing?
What my thing is.
Oh, okay. I've seen Death of a Unicorn. It's an A24 movie.
Oh, I heard about this one.
With Jenna Ortega and Paul Rudd and
bad.
I didn't think it was that great, but I'm always going to like be a fan of like originalness. Like I've started to like, I think as I've continued to explore this movie stuff, like I've been like, okay, originals are really cool. Like the whole, you know, cinema right now is like dictated. Like the box office is just remakes, franchise films, sequels. That's what, you know, makes the money. That's what most people are trying to do. Like it's cool when something original is like, that's why Anora was so cool. It's an original. Sean Baker did the directing, did the screenplay, did the writing, did everything. Like that's cool. And so I do appreciate that with Death of a Unicorn. It was an original story. But I didn't think it was like all that great. I saw a film called, I ended up seeing Opus.
Yes.
Which
that was one I wanted to see, but I just never got the chance.
It was all right. That's what I'll give it. I like
the woman from The Bear. I think she's really good.
I feel like she works as like the draw you. She's like the reality cast where it's like you have all this crazy stuff going around that's happening, and she's just like supposed to act as one of us. Like what the hell's going on? Like why are these people like about to kill themselves in a kitchen? Like why is this happening? And she kind of does that in the Opus film where everyone's like fawning over this celebrity doing this weird stuff on his little private thing, and she's like, why is this happening? But that was okay. I did see a movie called Drive My Car.
I heard of that one.
Ryosuke Hamaguchi, Japanese director, and I think it won like best, I forget if it won like best international movie in like the 2021 or 2022 Oscars, but I know that it was very well regarded, and I thought it was pretty good. I think sometimes when stuff is just like so long and like I need to like watch those in a theater, because when I watch it at home, I'm just like checking my phone. Harder to just completely draw me in to zone in. So I kind of wish I saw that one at the theater. But I did see my favorite one of my favorite movies that I only saw a couple years ago, but Princess Mononoke. It's a Studio Ghibli movie. It's an animated movie from 1997. Ever heard of this one?
Never.
I don't know how you do with animated movies, especially like older ones. I didn't know how I was going to do until I watched it. And I thought it's really cool because Studio Ghibli, it's just, you know, they won the Oscar either last year or 2 years ago for animated film. And it was the first time they ever did it. Meanwhile, it's probably one of my least favorite movies that they won for. But they did a re-release in 4K in IMAX at, they like this past week, and so I took my girlfriend to see it. And
did she
she did, but I messed up and I didn't check that it wasn't going to be dubbed. So we're fine with, like, we've watched stuff that's been subtitled before, but I've watched it in dubbed because Studio Ghibli gets actors and actresses who are like really popular to do their voiceovers, which not many companies or animated companies do. So like they had, I think Halle Berry is an actress, voice actress in this, in the English version. But yeah, that's one of my favorite movies, and it's out in theaters right now in like 4K IMAX. So hopefully that means it gets like a 4K physical release, which means I'm going to get that because it doesn't have one right now. What have you been watching?
I haven't watched anything new, but I've watched some old stuff. I'm trying as hard as I can to keep up with the rewatchables with Simmons and those guys. And so I got to watch Blue Chips again, which I hadn't seen in a very long time. College basketball movie that really resonates to today because of the NIL and stuff.
Is it the Shaq and Penny one?
I watched that. I'm watching Seven. Have you ever watched Seven? Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman?
I have not.
So Shea Serrano has his own sort of rewatchables, but it's called Good Movie. And it's his Substack. And so it's like $8 a month or something. And basically he picks a movie a week. he writes an essay about the movie, and then he creates a little video about the movie, and then the community kind of just has like an open free chat. So I saw Seven when it came out in the theaters, but I haven't seen it since. So thank you to Tubi, the Tubi app. Hopefully I'll be able to watch that, but I'm already behind, like, cause he's going to have a second movie this coming Friday. So I'll be behind, but I think I'm going to be having to watch some Minecraft movie coming up this weekend.
Oh man, I heard it sucked.
Having to watch that. But my favorite movie, and I got to find a way to watch this. I don't even know. I haven't looked at any possible screenings yet. Freaky Tales.
I do want to see that one. Yeah.
Jay Ellis, who was in Insecure, who was in Top Gun Maverick, who was in the new comedy about Jeannie Buss, or kind of or sort of portraying Jeannie Buss's life with... Goldie Hawn's daughter, Kate Hudson?
I think.
He's in that. He basically plays the coach of what's supposed to be the Lakers. He's supposed to be kind of like the Phil Jackson character, I guess. So he's in that. He's playing Eric Sleepy Floyd, who was my favorite player when I was a little kid on the Warriors. He looks nothing like Sleepy Floyd. And there's some like thing where Sleepy Floyd's getting robbed and he's got to like fight off all these bats. Like, I don't know if this story is even a sliver real.
Yeah.
Based in Oakland, Freaky Tales is
with Pedro Pascal. Like, it feels like a hit, like one of the top actors right now. They can get on a movie about Oakland. Like, that sounds cool.
I think Freaky Tales is a Too Short song. So there's the Too Short part of it. So yeah, like I don't even know what the release looks like. I don't know if it's going to be a national release, but at least it should be out here. So I want to see that this weekend. I just got to find the time. We'll see if I even have the time to watch it.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're done. So we'll figure out. Actually, I did have the Warriors schedule up here because I wanted to figure out when we were going to be able to record again. So the Warriors next week, they play, Tuesday, Wednesday, but no Thursday.
Ah, we got our day back.
So we can kind of write that one in pencil. It'll be after. They have so many games from now until then. So they Lakers, then Nuggets on Friday, back-to-back. Rockets on Sunday. Suns on Tuesday, back-to-back. Spurs on Wednesday. So they'll play five games before we record again next Thursday. And after that, there will only be two games left in the regular season, and they're done.
That's crazy. We'll have a much better outlook of what, obviously, after five games, like we'll probably know.
Yeah, I think we'll have a really good idea. And we'll also know what the strategy, because if they're, if they're in decent shape, and like I said, they may want to rest some guys, but if they're not in decent shape, they have some decisions to make. Mm-hmm. This is where we may need to, JK, they just go, JK, just go do your thing. Like, don't worry about Steve Kerr's voice in the back of your head. Just go. We need you to score 40. All right. That'll be it from here. So we'll be back next week, probably Thursday. We'll talk a little bit more about the NCAA tournament because it'll be done by then as well. So we'll know a little bit more about that, and we'll be able to pivot completely into Valkyrie's draft mode. Are we going to like a draft party? Like, they got to be doing something.
We should. I would love, but the thing is, it's on a weekday. It's on a random like Tuesday. It's not on like a Saturday.
Yeah.
I think if you, I'm sure there is going to be something if you come up.
Maybe if I come into the office, I could work from the office that day.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. We'll see you next week. For Brian, Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.